Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Otto Loos.
Still here, John.
And we're having a wonderful, wonderful conversation with Lisa Petroselli, who is the director of the incubator. We'll leave it like that. People are like, oh, what are you talking about now? The incubator.
The incubator.
But
sounds ominous.
Two things before we go forward. Give out a phone number. Sure. Where somebody in need could call you.
My direct line at the office is 516-463-4157. 463-4157. That goes right to my desk. And if I'm not there, I have voicemail.
Okay, terrific. And we just thought, when we went into the first break, we were talking a little bit about advanced directives. So, one, I'd like you to touch on the Family Healthcare Decisions Act, which I know changed a little bit. But also that the Unitarian Universalist Congregation at Shelter Rock, I know with their large grant program, you received $100,000. But this is a program that's in need of money.
Correct.
This is, you know, the people don't pay necessarily for the services because they need them.
Correct.
So that's an important thing for people out there to listen to. And if there's organizations you know that have grants, that give out grants, this is an organization that's worthy of qualification.
Thank you.
Okay.
So very briefly, as long as I'll jump onto that topic.
Yeah, go ahead.
First. So how we're funded, very simply, we're funded through grants that I write for, or I write and apply for. We're funded with private donations, and then we do also earn some compensation for the services we render. We do have many clients that are pro bono clients, meaning that we don't charge anything other than perhaps like postage or any kind of disbursements that we lay out. Usually we lay out for them and then they reimburse us. And those are not terribly burdensome. And then we have a category of clients that we charge low bono, which is low cost. Now, in order to qualify for pro bono, the rule of thumb is that you have to be at or below the 200% federal poverty guideline, which is issued at the beginning of every year by the federal government, and that's based on household composition and income.
And what do you mean? I'm sorry, 200%.
200%. So the federal poverty guideline is, you know, for one person in a household, it's X amount of dollars.
Okay.
So it would be 200% above that,
what the
baseline is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually most not-for-profits that deal with pro bono clients using that as the litmus test are between 150 and 200% of the above the federal poverty guideline.
Fine.
And then for the low bono clients, we charge hourly rates. Which are extremely, I'll say...
cheap.
I don't want to say cheap.
Economical.
Economical is a lovely lovely description. That are more economical for our neighbors in the community who need our help. We charge generally between $75 an hour and $175 an hour, again, depending upon
$75 today is almost a babysitter.
That's right. And if you compare it to the normal rates of attorneys in our geographic area, forget about the five boroughs, it's certainly economical. We have a website, www.justice.hofstra.edu, and you can check out who has a little bit about our program, of course, and the participants, and also who has donated to our program. And we're always very appreciative of anyone who wants to make any donations to us. Because
now,
it goes
if you didn't catch that, you can always call 311.
Right, absolutely.
And mention Hofstra Incubator, and they will get you the information.
Right. Or you can just Google us, too. I'm sure that we'll come up that way, and you'll
Hofstra
get also
Hofstra Incubator.
Hofstra Law Access to Justice Incubator. Right. And, of course, everything that goes into the program stays with the program because we do have the salaried fellows. This is not a profit firm. This is a not-for-profit firm.
Right.
So enough about that. So let's talk a little bit about powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, the Family Healthcare Decision Act, and living wills. So there's a number of documents out there that people can sign when they still have capacity. And, of course, all adults are presumed to have capacity unless adjudicated otherwise. Or determined to be otherwise by treating physicians.
Can I ask you one question there?
Sure.
If somebody is classified with dementia, I don't know if there's such a thing as light dementia, or does that mean they're not qualified or no? That's the
no.
Music.
Dementia to me, having been excuse me, having been involved in this area for a very long time, is really a nonsensical word, because we all know that there are people who have been classified technically with dementia that are very high functioning and can do most, if not everything, that they need to do on their own. There are people who are suffering with severe dementia, obviously, that have functional limitations. So it's really not a diagnosis. Okay. That's
memory loss is relative.
Okay. So that person would still be able to.
Correct.
Okay. That was my question.
If to determine whether you have threshold capacity to sign any of these documents, you want to make sure that the person knows what they're signing, what the import of what they're signing, the fact that they have selected people that make sense. You know, they're not just picking people randomly because that's how they've been influenced or they're under any duress.
Right.
And it's really, I think it's a case-by-case basis. So powers of attorney, someone can sign that. I'm not going to get into the hyper-technicalities of it, but it's basically a document where you select one or more people to serve in your shoes, in your place instead, to make decisions for you. And you can limit the types of powers that they have on your behalf, whether it's just banking, whether it's just, you know, real estate transactions, whether it's for a short period of time, whether it's durable, which means it will last beyond incapacity. You can appoint multiple people. They can serve either separately or jointly. And it's a very important document to have, because if in some instance you become incapacitated either temporarily or permanently, or even if you're out of the country or something like that and you need something done on your behalf, as long as that person has that document that's properly executed, they can function and speak for you. Healthcare proxies are documents where you are appointing an agent to serve to make decisions for you only at the time that you are considered to not be able to make those decisions on your own. So a power of attorney is effective as soon as it's signed, whether you're incapacitated or not, shortly thereafter. But healthcare proxies are only when you can't make your decisions on your own. And you can spell out specific things that you want your agent to do or to know about your wishes, especially with regard to life-sustaining treatment or end-of-life decisions, which is always very critical because that's when people end up in court, right? All these documents, of course, can be revoked, provided you still have the capacity to revoke them.
Right.
And they're revoked under different triggers in the statute. You have to take certain steps affirmatively to revoke your power of attorney, specifically with healthcare proxy. And of course, you know, if you divorce the person that's named under the power of attorney or the healthcare proxy, it's presumed that it's revoked unless you state otherwise. And healthcare proxies are revoked also if you execute another healthcare proxy after that. So you could have multiple powers of attorneys out there, documents, powers of attorney, but you cannot have multiple healthcare proxies because only the most recent healthcare proxy will be the document that has the full force and effect.
You know, I have a question. Just thinking, like, you obviously provide a terrific service. How do you get people to take advantage of this? How do you get clients?
So we're lucky enough at this point because we've had over 140 cases opened up in the last 2 years that
really?
We have
wow.
a lot of word. I know, it's
that's a lot.
Sometimes
you get these organizations, they're very good. You say, we had 9 people so far.
No.
You know?
Well, that's why I was curious, because of how, you know, you don't have a sign out
right.
in the street.
No, we don't. And sometimes we're a little difficult to find because we're actually on the campus of the law school. But have a lot of people at this point, word of mouth. We do take referrals from different service agencies in the community that know about us, because I make it a point of, I'm involved in a lot of professional organizations, so people know me and they know the program that I'm affiliated with now. And then we also do actually have referrals from non-judicial staff that's in the courthouse. A lot of clerks, when people come up and they say we need help, they give them a variety of different agencies or options, and we're one of them. So we've had a rather robust caseload.
Project Independence, you know, the social workers and nurses who are out in the field obviously run into all kinds of cases, and they may run into the need for this type of service.
That's true.
You know,
that's true and wonderful. And we do get calls from people who we cannot help because they're outside our general areas of practice. But then I always refer them either to a service provider like you, like Project Independence, who may have other connections, or the Bar Association in Nassau County, which does have a lawyer referral program.
Right.
The important thing is that people have to feel like it's not a dead end. If you can't help them,
correct.
There is some place to go. You just don't say it's not us and hang up on them.
No, I would never do that. Boy, would my mother be mad at me if I did that.
Unfortunately, this place is it's not our job, and they hang up on you. It's difficult,
so
but it's true.
What you're dealing with, as we talked offline, is your developing attorneys for the future who will have some real-world experience, and while doing that, they're benefiting the clients who can't afford to get that type of help. So it's really a win-win program for both sides, really.
I think so. I'm very proud of the program and where we've come in a very short period of time, and I am very happy to report that one of our many goals here, as you indicated, is closing the access to justice gap and providing representation to people who normally would not be able to afford it or even have the gumption to go try and find an attorney. But we're also trying to develop a lifelong commitment to legal services in the public interest for our recent graduates at Hofstra, and I am very happy to report that of the 7 people that have left the program, they have all gone into public servant or public service-oriented jobs.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's the ripple effect.
Now, that little bit of, honestly, that little bit of humanity that people need in a situation like this, they get it, and they go forward, and I wouldn't have assumed all of them would go in, but 7 is a huge number.
The world needs a little bit of humanity.
It's the truth. There's no question about it. But it's a program like this, and actually, we're out of time.
I mean,
it flies. I'm going to give Lisa's number again. It's 516-463-4157. It's 516-463-4157, or www.justice.hofstra.edu. Or cool. Just Google it. But
correct.
Lisa, this has been tremendous. What you do is tremendous.
Thank you.
And we're honored to have you on, and we look forward to having you on again.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back.
It.
You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM, wcwp.org.